Like all Hull FC fans, Up the Cream were absolutely heartbroken to hear of the passing of club legend Johnny Whiteley MBE. Johnny passed away peacefully on Sunday night, aged 91, and surrounded by his close family. He was the greatest player to ever pull on the famous irregular hoops of Hull FC, and he was one of the finest loose forwards to ever grace a rugby league field. But above all that, Johnny was a wonderful human being, and his legacy is nothing short of incredible. Johnny was a true gentleman and a pleasure to be around. He was full of life, laughter and kindness. There'll never be enough words to do the great man justice. Johnny Whiteley goes beyond being a legend of the club. He is the club. He's the greatest ever and he will never be forgotten. Our deepest condolences go out to his family and those dearest to him. Rest in peace, Johnny. Sleep tight. Words will never do justice to the legacy that Johnny Whiteley has left at Hull FC. But the next Up the Cream issue, February 2022, will do our best. We understand that this goes nowhere near to describing what kind of player and person Johnny was. But with the news breaking after Dan and Rich recorded the podcast this morning, we had to include something at the start. A full tribute will also be in the podcast next week. Welcome to the Up the Cream podcast 2022, episode 5. I'm Dan Tomlinson. I'm joined as always by Rich Harrison, aka Pommy Rich. How are you doing, Paul?
Yeah, I'm very well, mate. All the better for a win, which is always good.
Yeah, absolutely. Still warming up here, but absolutely freezing. That was grim. That was like a throwback to winter rugby. It was cold, wet, heavy pitch, two horrendously muddy kits, but yeah. Job done. Just good to see the defensive grit back. I mean, yeah, it was an ugly game, as I say. It was grim. It wasn't pretty. But, like you say, job done. And in the opening round, that's what matters.
It's 2 points more than a lot of teams got. So, yeah, I'm happy with that.
Defence is where Hull earn their biggest plaudits, and rightly so. And there's a quote from Brett Hodgson that I absolutely loved because it was honest and it was fresh and it was refreshing. And he said he loved to see the willingness to work in this side for each other, because we lost that at the end of last year. And the challenge now is to maintain that level. And that is the nail on the head, because that's all we want.
Yeah.
That's all we want to see. Win, lose or draw, if Hull FC put in that sort of effort into every single game, you can go away and thinking, okay, great, we won that one. Okay, we came up short here, we got beat, but okay, yeah. You know, we live to fight another day. What we don't want to see is roll over and get beat by hefty margins when we do play the likes of St Helens, which you can come on to later, but obviously, yeah, defensively, really good to see the togetherness in them, the fight in them, the aggression, and the fact that Hull looked comfortable defending as well. I mean, Wakefield had a lot of ball, a lot of territory, a lot of possession, but they didn't really look like scoring, and that's a credit to Hull's edges, who jammed in when they needed to. I thought Adam Swift and Daniel McIntosh were absolutely outstanding, both of them, really good, held their own. You know, they're both tough when they needed to be. I said they both made the decision-making when jamming in really well. But yeah, the middles were good. Danny Elton on his 387th equal record Super League era appearance. You know, he led from the front defensively, and that's what you get from Danny Elton. We all know that. Effort is never in question. That's not the problem. We all know, again. But yeah, just, you know, 1-16. We can't say 1-17 because Paul Little Aid and Braille didn't get on, but 1-16. Yeah, again. 1-16. You know, I'm very content with that. As far as an opening day result and performance goes, you know, we've set some standards there. And as I say, the challenge, and you can say this as many times as you like because it's going to be so relevant throughout this year, is not dropping away from that bar set now. That's what we want to see week in, week out.
Yeah, and through adversity as well. That's what gets me, you know. Griffin and Tuivasa dropping out either the day of the match or the day before the match to be replaced by Wynn and Scott. You know, Johnston playing at loose man. That's not the team that you'd have wanted to play the first game of the season, really. You know, Connor broke his hand 2 weeks ago and then gets sent off 15 minutes from the end as well. You know, you've got three players on debut. You know, it's not ideal. It's really not ideal. And we did it through terrible weather, bit of adversity, a red card against us, and probably not our strongest team. So, I mean, there's not a lot to whinge about, I don't think. You know, and all three of those are debutants scored tries. So, you know, what have we got to whinge about? You know, it's pretty good.
Absolutely. I mean, that was a depleted side. Like you say, it was one that was disrupted. You know, two players going down in the team on the day before, and then having to reshuffle your 17 that you've worked on all week is frustrating. And like you say, it was good to see Hull stand up in those tough moments, because that's something we haven't seen. You know, that character, that grit, that determination. It's not something we haven't seen in a fair few months now. You're going back to June last year when we're all waxing lyrical about Owen.
Yeah,
I love to see that, because that's all. Again, it's all we ask for as fans is to get that effort and to get that response from the team. And yeah, it was good. And the way we did roll the sleeves up after losing Jake Connor to the red card and to see out that win. I mean, when you think about it, all conceded two tries. One was from an error where Johnston picks the ball up, races away to score the next play. The second, again, Tom Johnston, one of those freakish one-handed finishes where his feet are six foot, you know, up in the air. It's just you're ridiculous. You take your hat off and you say, wow, that's absolutely outstanding. But apart from that, you know, Wakefield, as I say, they didn't look like scoring. Hull shut them out. And I say, to have that character about them and see it out with, you know, with 12 men is really pleasing. I mean, the sending off itself, I mean, the problem is, you're looking at it from the naked eye and thinking, that was chest, wasn't it? I didn't look any higher. It looked like a chest contact, but then you see the video and it looked. But then, how can you judge it off one video when it's really fast and it's only one angle and you know you haven't got the head-on view that I have live.
The 10 angles that you get on the televised game, exactly. That is the problem with Super League, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Is that you know you have got games that don't have that, which might mean that a player gets away with murder. It also might mean he gets over-punished, especially because it looks like at the moment that's what they're cracking down on.
Well, yeah, earlier in the game, there was a lot of penalties. Well, there was two within 5 minutes of players charging down the kicker and kicking him after the kick had been made. And as I say, they both got penalised. And then it happened after in general play when I think it was Luke Gailey passed the ball, got hit off the ball, and again a penalty came. So that's something that they're really clamping down on. And then we've seen, obviously, cards come into the competition this weekend, and if that's the precedent set, I do worry a little bit, because we saw what happened in the NRL when they came back from one of the COVID breaks and they started literally any contact with the head was a yellow or a red, and it ended up being a farce. That's what I worry about.
For a couple of weeks it was appalling, but then it kind of settled down again. Look, we need to get it out of the game. And, you know, there's always going to be, start of every season, there's going to be some sort of clamp down on something. You know, whether it's about head-high tackles, or it's about laying on in the tackle, or it's about speed of the ruck, or it's about constant offsides. I mean, the one that seems to be quite big over here at the moment is they're going to clamp down on teams just giving away an extra tackle at the start of a set. You know, because that's been ridiculous. You know, players, you know, being offside and allowing the referee just to call another six right at the start of a set because they know it's not going to hurt them. Well, now it's going to actually be blown and, you know, the ball's going to be kicked into touch, so you're going to lose ground and then you're going to get a seven tackle set. So it's going to be, you know what I mean? There'll always be a clampdown, because that's the way that we always act as a sport, is that, you know, the game evolves and the rules and the interpretation of the rules have got to evolve with it, because the coaches are so smart that they're finding loopholes and, you know, like Melbourne did with the wrestle, or like Saints did with the speed of the play of the ball. You know, the rest of the comp takes a while to catch up, and when they do, they use borderline illegal tactics to slow a good team down, and it's got to be clamped down on.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously the way Super League's gone right now is...
It's head highs.
Yeah, but then I look at what's happened across the board. You look at Dylan Napper, that was probably a red card if we're all being honest. It was a typical Dylan Napper moment. The Leeds Wire game, the James Bentley one, I must admit, I was in the camp where I thought, really? Everyone said he had a clenched fist, but I tell you what, in one of the still shots, that fist is not clenched.
I've got to say, I didn't see any of the Leeds Warrington game, unfortunately, because Channel 4 haven't sold the rights to Fox over it, so I see all the Sky games, I see all the BBC Challenge Cup games, but I don't see the Channel 4 games, which is gutting. But yes, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, well, yeah, as I say, it was a big hit from James Bentley.
Was he on his debut
for Leeds? Yeah, the problem is, I thought Gareth Widdop, he slipped and changed direction twice, and how are you supposed to adjust as a defender when that happens? And I don't know, I grew up watching this game, watching the likes of Sam Burgess and Sonny Bill Williams absolutely clobbering people with shoulders and big hits, and you're watching that as a kid and you're thinking, this is absolutely fantastic. You know, people of your era watching Lee Crooks, Les Boyd knock 10 barrels of shit out of each other and thinking, wow, this is fantastic. That's what we love about rugby league. I understand there's a duty of care, because obviously we've got to look after players and we don't want to see, you know, players later in life, post-retirement, you know, suffering from, well, basically brain traumas or brain injuries. But there's a line, and it is a rough, tough spot, as obviously Doyle Davidson quoted all those years ago. And that's what we love about
it. It's rough, it's tough, it's rugby league.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And no, the Connor one, I thought it was really harsh. I mean, Hodgson said as much in his post-match comments. He probably said it was yellow at worst. Penalty sufficient, maybe I would have lived with that. But as I say, watching that from the naked eye, I was stood in the corner right where the North Stand shed is, and I'm thinking, it didn't actually look that bad, but then I suppose I am 40 yards away. I've only had that one view. Yeah. And then the video that's come out on social media, it's fast, and if you blink, you'll miss it. So.
And to be fair, Connor looked absolutely amazed that he'd been sent off for it. But then again, that's Connor. you can't read too much into that, can you?
No, you can't. No, it's going to be an interesting topic, though, because I tell you what, if we've got... I mentioned Channel 4, we've got all these new fantastic TV deals, and if all our best players are in the stand because they're getting sent off / banned, and that's the worry now. I mean, what's going to happen with the bans this weekend? It's going to be ridiculous. I mean, those disciplinary mobsters will be rubbing their hands together, won't they? They'll be thinking, oh, I can get a 3-course meal out of this. It's going to take all night. Yeah, it's...
Do you know what? The fact that it happened late in the game as well, that kind of plays on my mind a little bit, because if it had happened halfway through the game, they might be willing to give Connor sending off sufficient, thinking, you know, he spent half the game in the stands, that's enough. Because he only spent 10 minutes in the stand, they're going to go, no, let's give him a match, I reckon. And that would be awful for us. It would mean that Conor Wynn probably plays at fullback, because Shaw seems like he's on the nose. So, you know, it just, interesting.
Absolutely.
Very interesting.
Absolutely. And just to finish off on these cards, and if we're going by what we saw this weekend and letter of the laws, I mean, every contact the heads are sending off, or at least the yellow, then there was one on David Fusatua where he got absolutely smashed. I think it was Ben Curry with a shoulder straight in his face. Nothing happened. So if we're going to set a precedent, at least maintain it, at least be consistent, or what's the point? Because we're just going to end up being a soap opera, you know. And to be honest, it's to put a negative spin on what was a really good opening weekend, but It's worrying. It is worrying because, like I say, no one wants to see players in the stands. Obviously, we want to see clean games away from foul play, but we don't want to be scrutinising every single bit and sanitising the product so much that it becomes touch rugby. And, yeah, I do worry about that because, you know, yeah, I'm only 29, but I am old school. I do love a big hit. And that element of the game is fantastic. It's what we all grew up on. It's what we all fell in love with. And I don't want to lose that. I really don't. But yeah, going back to Hull FC, as we say, a depleted side, a disrupted side, you know, very good, 1-16, you know, some very good performances in there. I'm glad you mentioned Conor Wynn because he was absolutely excellent. He was one of Hull's best, to be honest, in the centre. He looks really good there as well. You know, he come through as a fullback, didn't he, when he broke through in 2019. But
yeah,
he's had a few games, I see, out wide now on that edge and looking good for it. The thing is, he's quick and he's good on his feet. Good footwork and he's elusive, and when you've got those traits, you're going to be hard to stop.
Yeah, exactly. I think Lynham's still turning, isn't he? After he got stepped. He looked the part, didn't he? And you know, that's what happens when you've got another year under your belt and you've been playing consistently in the first team, and you're growing and you're filling out and you're maturing and your decision making's getting better and you're surrounded by a bunch of really good people. I mean, he's learning from, you know, he's learning from the likes of Griffin, Tuma Vave, Connor and you know, and even Scott, you know, because let's not forget, you know, he was you know, Great Britain, was it Great Britain students or under 18s captain or whatever it was,
England Academy,
you know, so he's got a bit of leadership amongst that younger group because he's been there and done it, you know. So you know, he's learning from the best, mate, and the one thing that he's got that you can't coach is speed. And you know, all he's got to do is get his defence right and get his handling right, and then he's unstoppable because you can't stop a player with speed.
No, absolutely. I mean, the footwork for the trial he set up for Luke Gayle was nothing short of phenomenal, really. And it, yeah. You know, I'd actually say it was James Luli good. You know, when you watch the clips of the trials he got in the...
There's a call.
Yeah, absolutely. But you look at the try clips that he got, obviously the Wembley 1 1985 springs to mind, but also 1983 against Castleford, the change of direction with his feet when he literally put the fullback on his ass without even touching him because his feet were that good. That's what it reminded me of, because it was a hell of a turn of pace from Conor Wynn, but his footwork was exceptional. I mean, Tom Lynham...
Yeah, because he turned him inside out.
Exactly.
He feigned to go inside and then went outside and then around, yeah.
I mean, obviously the novelty is, yeah, the flying pig and all that, but he's not slouch, he's Lynham. He's still, you know, obviously he's not as quick as when he first broke on the scene at all. I mean, two broken ankles see to that, don't they? But, yeah, that was a hell of a play. It was really good, and yeah, it is a big call, and some people have been thinking, ah, shut up, but... That's the type of rugby I want to see. That was sensational.
I'm far too polite.
Honestly, it was unbelievable. That's what I want to see. You know, you come to rugby league, you want to see something like that, don't you? You want to be entertained. You want to be thinking, Jesus, that was outstanding. And that was a play where I'm thinking, wow. You know, it was good. It was really good. And especially in a game which was a slugfest for the majority, on, like I say, on a heavy pitch, then... Wasn't one for the purist. It wasn't pretty at all, if we're being honest. It was grim. I mean, the whole day was grim. The weather was grim. The place is grim. And that ground is grim. Everything about Wakefield is grim. But, yeah, really, really good. Really good. And, obviously, Joel Overdewey, he's tried to see him do a huge show and go, dumbing his way through the line and plonking the ball down. And, yeah, that was really good. Interesting try celebration as well. He got absolutely mobbed and... Obviously, Jake Connor putting McIntosh over. Like you say, all three debutants scoring, and those are three players that Brett Hodgson has brought in. He's identified there's been an area of improvement required there, and he's, you know, he's obviously spoke about what he wants, and he's stuck to his word, and he's brought these players in, and here we are with three of them scoring on the debut.
Yeah. Well, you know, as vindication goes for your head coach and your recruitment and retention policy, you don't get much better than that, do you?
Absolutely. I mean, fair play to Hodgson. I mean. Us too, we do agree a lot, and one thing we will agree on is our admiration for our head coach at the moment, because we can see what he's trying to do. We can see that he knows the score, he knows that things needed to be shaken up, and he's coming and he's, as you famously say, he's been no respecter of reputations, and he's honest, he's accountable, and he sticks to his word, and yeah, I really do like the bloke, and I love the way he wants Hull FC to play, because we've seen it. The span, even on a game which... Hull struggled to make ground in. It was tough to get up that field, and the same moments for the sort of brilliance I've just explained with Conor Wynn were very limited. But even then, the span showed some moments that when it links together, it's going to be a threat this year, and it always is going to be. You've got Luke Gayle at first receiver backing out those instructions. You know, never shut up, never stop running his mouth. It was great to see that organisation and that leadership. You've got Josh Reynolds who popped up. As I say, a tough game for an halfback, but he did have a couple of moments, linked up very well with Andre Savelio, which was good to see. And then you've got Jake Connor playing in a dinner jacket, controlling the game, not even with a speck of mud on his jersey, just popping up with the big players that win all games of rugby league. How good is that?
Yeah. It's perfect. It's absolutely perfect. And, you know, we've identified where we had holes in the system. We had no speed. We've sorted it. We had poor organisation. We've sorted it. Or we're sorting it, you know? We had limited go forward 2 years ago. You know, where we were getting, for the first time in years, we were getting rolled in the forwards. And, you know, we seem to have brought, you know, your Satires and your Sows, you know, we brought them over as projects almost, but we've turned them into legitimately good Super League players. You know, we've won one game from one. It wasn't pretty, and we snuck over the line, really. But we won. And, you know, on a ground where the last game of the season last year, we absolutely capitulated. So that's growth. That's moving forward, right? And so that's what we've got to do. Next week's a big test. A, we're at home. B, we're on national TV. And C, it's St Helens. You know, I mean, that's a that's a hat trick for the ages, that one. You want the whatever the bloody stadium's called now, the MKM, to be absolutely packed, or at least loud and boisterous and noisy, and feel hostile and feel intimidating for those Saints players. And we need to give it a red hot crack, you know. And on that, on yesterday's evidence, we're very, very capable of doing that. We've just we still lack a bit of genuine a bit of genuine class. But, you know, Gale and a fit Reynolds go a long way towards mitigating that. They really do. Bring Tuivasa and Griffin, who are all class, back into that team. And, you know, even if you do that, I mean, it's a hell of a job to drop a Cam Scott, to drop a Connor Wynn, who played brilliantly, both of them. You know, and then, you know, you've got other players to come back in as well. Wow. You know, it's good. Look, I'd rather be sat here Monday morning, Monday night for me, after that performance, than sat on the east side of the river after that performance. Do you know? And I hate to always, you know, I'm not one of those people that will always compare and contrast us against the bin dippers, but you know, it bears some closer inspection. You know, they were hyped and underperformed. We were written off and performed. I'd much rather be a black and white today.
Well, I would every other day, but yeah.
Yeah, obviously.
No, I agree with all that. The only thing that worries me going forward is, as I say, Hull did struggle to make ground at times, and they did struggle to get upfield, and Chris Sattai was the only one who backpedalled Wakefield, really. His carries were really good. You know, skittling people, sitting him on the backside, making meters after contact. You know, his average game must have been insane, because some of his carries were excellent. And you get that with Chris Sattai because of his size and his power. And he's an outstanding rugby league player. And at moments last year, was arguably one of the best front rowers in the competition. I don't even feel bold in saying that. He was incredible.
Yeah.
Picked up where he's left off on that evidence. Obviously, he contracted COVID last year. We all know what that does and whatnot. But he seems to have shook him off, and that was a very encouraging start from Sattai. Ligi Sow too was an absolute workhorse and got through a mountain of work. And good to see that the bang he got, I think it was to his head, he's nothing serious. Hodgson confirmed post-match that he's fine. He'll be fine to go next week. What worries me is what comes beyond that. And
about the sounds of it as well, Savelio stood up as well.
He did. Him and Lane on the edges were outstanding. So John Lane had to move from 13 because of what happened with Griffin and some of Harvey causing a reshuffle, with Cam Scott moving to the backs and Johnston obviously stepping up. So, yeah, that wasn't ideal. The actual front rowers, the actual middles is what worries me, because off the bench we had Chris Sattai came off the bench, but the other three after Sattai and Sauer, Brad Fash, Jack Brown and Aidan Brawler, didn't get on. We can't afford to do that against St Owens, because they've got some outstanding players. And James Roby, if he gets a roll on, he'll just pick that ball up, he'll jump out that ruck. I mean, how good must it be to watch that every week? And you've got players running off him, and they get the quick play of the balls and off they go again. And it's really hard to stop, as we saw on Friday night. And yeah, it's the middles that worry me. Obviously, Kane Evans is suspended, stole for another couple of rounds. Scott Taylor's obviously out. Josh Bowden wasn't risked this week. He should be coming back in next week. And this is a bloke out of contract. And I'm looking at this as a positive. I mean, when we did our call last year, it was one we both said needs to go. But if you're looking at, as I say, from a completely positive stance, you're Josh Bowden right now, you're coming back into the team, you have got to perform or you won't get a deal. It's as simple as that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He didn't go, we've got him, we've got to get the best out of him.
Exactly.
And I'm the same with Jordan Johnston, you know? I don't think he's good enough, I really don't. But didn't put a foot wrong yesterday. And playing out of position at lock, at loose man, you know? Well, you know, he did a job for us and he did well. What can you say? You know, he's, as long as he's pulling on a black and white shirt and he's giving his all, I will support him.
Well, absolutely. And this is the thing. It's what we always say. It's always, if we get that effort, fans will engage with that and they'll respond to that and they'll back them. Saw that yesterday. The crowd, you know, everyone was piss wet through and absolutely freezing to death. But you saw that effort on the pitch and you can respond to that. You can get behind them, and the crowd did that. I mean, there must have been about two 2,000, dare I say, knocking on 2,500 old fans there, and they made themselves, you know, heard at times in what is an open-air stadium where noise don't get trapped or anything like that. As I say, a horrible venue, absolute farce, but it's still a Super League venue 14 years on after licensing, but, you know, oh yeah, we'll sort our ground out. Yeah, okay, yeah, you and Cass, sure. Yeah, next joke, sure, yeah, all right then. But, it's a bit embarrassing, really, but it is what it is. And do you know what? Bellevue is a tough place to go to. I think, I saw a tweet, actually, from a Wakefield fan I follow on Twitter called Ben, and he said that since 2016, Hull have won pretty much 90% of the games against Wakefield by a single score or less. So it shows that we do have some tough games against them. Obviously, the opening day 5 years ago took, I think it was a 75th-minute winner from Jake Connor to win the game, and we only won by 4 points. You know, we had some battles at the KCOM. You think the Marks need 52-metre drop goal. Again, in the Super 8s, year before, 2017, we only beat them by a point again. So, you know, they never go away, Wakefield. They're, I don't know, they may be a bit of a, I don't really like this term, but a bogey team to play against. You know, they're plucky, they're awkward, they're a nuisance, and... Yeah, I think it is a tough place to go to, especially given those conditions. And people say it's the same for both sides, but you still got to turn up, haven't you? And
you always used to say going to the Boulevard, right? The Boulevard crowd was worth probably a try or two tries to Hull.
Yeah.
It's probably the opposite with Wakefield, is that it's not worth a score to them, but it's worth one less for you.
Opposition. Absolutely, I agree. Yeah,
do you know what I mean? It's not like there's a lot of them and they're vocal and it's loud and it's intimidating. It's just a bloody hole. It'd be like travelling to bloody Batley every week or something. It's just, you know, it's a third world stadium, isn't it? It really is. It's like how stadiums used to be. Unfortunately, and you know, like exactly what you said, you know, it needs urgent attention, as does, and I'll never call it the jungle, as does Weldon Road, you know, and it really does. They need either knocking down and starting again or some serious investment. But both Cass and Wakefield have played on that for years. The fact that, you know, it's a crap hole, but it's our crap hole, you know. I remember Brian Smith taking a whole team there in the early 90s and refusing to have the team go back into the dressing sheds at half-time, and he did his team talk on the pitch at half-time because he refused to let the players go back into the Weldon Road dressing rooms because they were pokey and tiny and he hated it. So he gave the team talk on the pitch. You know, I mean, that's been going on for years and years and years, and it's not got any better in those two grounds. But, you know, we kind of realised that we needed to be out of our, you know, because the Boulevard wasn't fit for purpose. As much as we all get nostalgic and bleary-eyed about it, it wasn't fit for purpose.
We've moved on as a club, haven't we? I mean, it's 20 years in October since we played New Zealand in the last ever game there, and we've moved on, we've come a long way. Look at the attendances and the facilities, and some people don't like the Alpha Baguette Spaghetti Stadium, but, and I'm probably one of them, to be honest, it is a little bit soulless, and it's not quite, you know, what the Boulevard was. But you got to move on, you got to evolve. As I say, times change, but you got to keep on moving, haven't you? So, yeah, it's definitely stood us in better stead. And you could probably say the same for St Helens, who were probably in a better position as a club now after moving to Langtree Park. Same with Warrington after moving to the Halliwell Jones. That, obviously, we'd love that, to have a ground that's ours and ours only, but it's a pipe dream at the moment. It's a pie in the sky, isn't it? And obviously there was talk about Adam Pearson had a couple of comments on Humberside last week. Started off really well, actually, yeah. Accepting where Hull are on the field, realising that the end of last season wasn't good enough. No spin, none of that. He said it how it was in playing matters, which is really refreshing. But then he started talking about money, and I'm thinking, oh, for God's sake. 5-minute whinge about money, you know, as pair with Adam these days. And so, yeah, some of the stuff was interesting. He said we're over, obviously, 6,200 members now. He said we've had a first meeting with the Super Stadium Management Company, which was positive. It was the word he used to describe it, which, yeah, still a long way to go, obviously. But what I didn't like to hear was these talks, obviously, with the new Hull City owner, are through a third party, and that can't be right. It's got to be, however you pronounce the Hull City guy, what, you know, Akon, whatever he's called, and Adam in the same room, face-to-face. That's what it's got to be. Because it's got to be for the benefit of both parties. And yeah, stadium talk is tedious because at the end of the day, it wouldn't have existed without one or the other. We signed up for our lease long before City did, and I hate the attitude of some City fans where they think it's theirs and they want us want us out and they don't like it and they whinge about the pitch all the time, even though the pitch is immaculate in the summer. I just, it all winds me up. But going back to a point you made about, you know, the comparison between the two old clubs at the minute, and I sort of look at where we're at, and we haven't overhyped OFC because we've accepted where we are. And acceptance has been the huge word for me this winter, this off-season, whatever you want to call it. And it's like drawing a line, isn't it? We know the limitations. We know we'd rather improve this position or, you know, strengthen up this area, and we'd rather this player went and you know, and everything else. But like I say, the line has to be drawn, and just got to get on with it and accept where we are. And if we get what we got on Sunday throughout this season, that'll ensure that we win more games than we lose. I'd like to think that come the summer and come a greater understanding with your Gales and your Connors and your Reynolds, obviously as they get more minutes together on the training field and on the playing field, that will entail a faster, slicker brand of rugby. And obviously we've got the pace in McIntosh and Swift to do that. The speed point I really can't emphasise enough, because, you know, everyone fell in love with Adam Swift last year because he was absolutely outstanding. He was brilliant. He was arguably our best player. Well, certainly one of our best players in those early rounds, and he continued that right throughout the year with his try scoring. He was brilliant. McIntosh is going to be exactly the same. And I just love the fact we've got two absolute speedsters. Unfortunately, we didn't get to see him in the clear, given the type of game that it was on Sunday, but maybe we will this weekend or the week after. And I think when we do get those opportunities to set him free, they'll come up with the goods. I mean, McIntosh got clobbered as well when he scored his try, but he scored it. He managed to get the ball down. He got absolutely smashed. So it's just good to have that speed, but also to have that toughness, because we think of modern day wingers and they've got to do a lot of work in backfield now, aren't they, bringing that ball out. And think, do they need to be, well, Radford's philosophy is they need to be 16 stone and built like a brick shit house to do that. But no, you don't. You just have to be tough.
Yeah.
It's what's inside you that counts.
I think the difference is that 3 years ago under Radford, we were a grinding team that kind of feared summer a little bit. We knew we'd be better when the weather was terrible and we could stick the ball up the jumper and just roll over teams. I think now, like a lot of teams in Super League, we're looking forward to flat tracks and warm conditions and dry conditions, because we've actually got some players that can actually take advantage of that now, which we've never had. You know, I mean, Reynolds is going to be better on a hot day than a cold day. You know, if he's got slightly tight hamstrings or whatever, the fact that he got through 80 minutes yesterday, more or less, and was still popping up and making contributions, and you know, apparently there was one thunderous hit on Miller.
Yeah.
You know, it just the fact that he's doing that, and it's cold and it's wet and it's damp and it's not ideal conditions for him at his age with his history of muscle problems. That's a really positive sign for me. That's a really positive sign. Because when it gets to April and May and June and it starts to warm up, and then it gets to July and August and September, when it's nice and warm and it's dry, that's when we should be absolutely making hay. Literally while the sun shines. You know, we've got some rapid backs now, and not just big, you know, 6 foot tall, 120 kilo wingers like we've had in the past, who, you know, after 50, 60 minutes in the sun were knackered.
No, I get you, and that's the thing. We've got to be fitter. We've got to be more eye catching to watch this year, and I think we'll see both of those aspects come to the fore. I really do believe that. I'm not saying, as we've done these podcasts, you know, five episodes in now, we haven't said that Hull are going to be top four. I don't think we've even mentioned Old Trafford, have we? Is that the first time that's been mentioned? Dare I say the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, is that the first time that's been mentioned as well? You know, we're not saying who we're going to make the finals and do silverware. Because we know that's unlikely to happen, but it's about moving forward from last year and accepting where we're at, but building for the future as well. And we're doing that because Hodgson is bringing parts into Hull FC and binding them all together to have a real go. And I think we will see that. If we stick with him this year and see that brand of rugby and be more eye-catching, and say when we get the dry tracks and the summer months come and these players really come into their own, then it's going to be progress on last year. I mean, that's not hard to really beat, if we're being honest, but you know, it is what it is. If we get progress, we go forward like that, then you look at next year thinking, okay, right, we've got a few contracts that are expiring. We can say thank you for your service off your pop. find a new club. You know, maybe a bit more subtle and a bit more polite than that. But we've got to be ruthless and put the club first. And then we think, right, we've identified this player. We're going to bring him in. He's going to strengthen our squad. This is exactly what we need. We go again next year. And it's a process, isn't it? It's a system and a process, the famous words that we used last year. And we haven't got that system. We haven't got that process right in the past few years. But dare I say right now, under Brett Hodgson, we had the win.
No, I agree. I agree. And look, I think we're very aware. To anyone that's listening to this, we are very aware that Dan and I agree quite a lot, and we don't want this to just turn into a love fest for Hodgson, and for Reynolds or for Connor or for whoever else, who other people may, you know, have problems with Connor's temperament, may have problems with Reynolds' age and whatever else, and they might have problems with Hodgson and the way we dropped off at the end of last year. But at the end of the day, I think we can both see what they're trying to do, and I think we can see why he's signing various players, and we can see what the end game is. And it's a process, and we're nowhere near the end of that process, and he's got to be given time to complete that process. You can't judge him after one season, because he inherited an absolute basket case of a problem with our salary cap. He's gone some way towards rectifying that by getting rid of Snead and by getting rid of Fanua, both of whom were under contract and under big contracts, probably two of the highest earners at the club. You know, it's probably a 4-5 year project to get Hull to absolutely where he wants, and he's on a 3-year contract. So it's in Hodgson's best interests to make sure that we get there. But the problem is the balancing act, isn't it? It's getting there whilst still winning games. It's all right clearing the decks and saying, you're not coming back, you're going, you're tapped on the shoulder, we don't need you next year. But through that, you've got to keep people engaged enough, and you've got to keep the fan base engaged enough to make sure that you've got the support and people out booing the team and booing you as a coach. So you've got that real balancing act of making change, but winning games. And that's where we are at the moment. We're a team in transition. You know, Gale, he's a step in the right direction, but he's not a long-term answer at his age. So, you know, whether he's a 1-year or a 2-year contract or whatever, you get the feeling that whether it is Jake Truman from Cass, or maybe it's someone from Australia, maybe it's someone like Luke Brooks who might be out of contract next year, whoever, you get the feeling that this is just a step in the road. You know, we're not looking at Old Trafford this year. We're not, you know, we might be looking at Wembley if we jag a couple of results. But at the end of the day, this is a process, and we're not that far down the road yet.
No, absolutely, I could not agree more with that. It's a shame that we do agree with this, but maybe we should get a Nancy Hodgson person on the podcast.
Need to be more controversial.
Yeah, just do a Phil Clark and say loads of shit for clicks. Nah, you're all right.
Well, look, to be honest, right, if anyone listening to this next time, feel free to message us and give us something that's indefensible that we can argue about.
Oh, yeah. Or maybe we should just get someone who doesn't see what Josh Reynolds and what Jake Connor bring to the table right now. And there's a few of them out there, and people will look at Jake Connor's performance yesterday, right, and say, oh, he's a liability, he got sent off. Oh, he don't run the ball. He don't do this, he don't do that. All right, what did he do? Okay. He put the pass through to Connor Wynn. Great line from Connor Wynn, but the pass has to be executed, and he did that, and ends up in a Hull FC try. The third one was all about Jake Connor. That cut-out pass to McIntosh is something I don't think I've ever seen in a Hull FC player before. We haven't had that fullback who's been able to put that pass out like that, because, sorry, but Jamie Shaw doesn't provide that. It's as simple as that. So without those two contributions, Hull FC don't win that game. Yeah, we could have lost it at the end because of the sending off. Tom Johnson scored his freakish try, and Wakefield could have got another and ended up winning the game by 2 points, but they didn't. So Jake Connor won Hull FC that game with his two try contributions, because that's what matters. You know, it's like when you're watching football and they say, oh, we've had 72% possession, we've had 12 shots on target. Yeah, but you haven't scored. You're losing 1-0.
Yeah.
Who gives a crap? Yeah. It's the same in rugby league. What matters are tries and try assists, because that's what win your games. You can't win games unless you score points, and scoring points has been a problem at Hull FC for as long as I can bleeding remember. With Jake Connor, we've got someone who will provide points. He will, when he's on that field and when he's firing, because let's face it, when's the last time he had a bad game? When's the last time he had a game where he didn't contribute something off, you know, a pass that's led to a try or something that he's created and made happen? I can't remember. You're going a long way back. You've got, as I say, you've got Luke Gale, who's going to lead that side around the field, who's going to organise, who's going to distribute, who's going to be vocal. Josh Reynolds, I do not understand the criticism that he gets. His energy is ridiculous. Like you mentioned, it was a quiet game for an halfback yesterday. It was tough, as I say. It was a terrible game, if we're being honest. It was grim as hell. It was a slugfest. But so Reynolds realised that. All right, how can I get more involved? Oh, you know what? I'll start going out for a big hit or something. Okay, I'll go clobber Jacob Miller. What can I do next? I'll start popping up around the field rather than stick on my right edge channel, and I'll, you know, play with intensity and play with enthusiasm and try, you know, contribute. And he did that. And I say it linked up well with Andrea Sevelia, who was, again, he was really good. And that was pleasing to see, because when we did the call last year, it wasn't one we said that we wanted to go, because we both like him. But we did notice, and especially as we did the later podcast in the year, that his performance level had dropped right off. Can you blame some of that on Tony Club being a racist shithouse? Who knows? But
possibly,
You don't know, do you? It's tough, and when it happens to a full team, you start picking out individuals, and you're thinking, okay, yeah, he's dropped off, but yeah, so is he. He's underperforming. But yeah, that was good. I think the challenge for Andrea Sevelia, as it is for every player, is to keep out of that every week. I just want to see Hull evolve this year, and like I say, Joe Lovejoy, I want to see him at Ucker. It was great at Lewis, man. Obviously, you know, brilliant moment for him, showing and going and getting that try, but, you know, he was signed as a hooker because we identified hooker as being a problem. I want to see him at hooker. I understand the situation with forwards right now, and I can't really see that improving next week. I think the only change we'll probably see, if Griffin comes in, Cam Scott will probably play back row with Jordan Lane back at 13, but it gives you a middle option, but, you know, we're still lightweight. We're still two or three down. Josh Bowden, who knows? I mentioned him before, but it's an enigma right now with Josh Bowden. You think, is he going to play? Is he going to pull up again? Is he going to tweak this muscle? The bloke just can't stay fit. He's got the worst look in the world. But
I'm
just looking at that and thinking, yeah, that's what it's all about this year. It's about evolving and looking at the way Hodgson wants Hull FC to play and accepting that and thinking, oh, yeah, actually, this is really good.
Look, it is a shame because, you know, if Taylor was fit and a couple of others were fit and Evans wasn't suspended, in an ideal world, you'd throw Bowden to Bradford for a month just to get his confidence back and get his match fitness up.
Yeah, just to get some continuity, you know, in appearance. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you'd throw him out on dual reg, wouldn't you? Just for a month. But we haven't got that luxury. So he's going to have to come back in and he's going to have to perform. Because, you know, we can't. The one criticism I'll always have of Brett Hodgson's tactical nous is playing a game like that yesterday with 16 players with no intention of putting Aidan Burrell on. That, to me, it's not the first time he's done it. If they're good enough to be on the bench, they have to be good enough to use. I'm sorry, they have to be. And there were other options yesterday. He could have put Shawl on there. He could have started Lovadura at 13. Could have put Shawl on as a spelling hooker. There were other options. And to put Burrell on the bench and not use him and to play that game with 16 players, that puts undue stress on the rest of the players, and especially on your forward rotation. If you've got no intention of using him, don't put him in the squad.
No, that's a good
point.
Can't
do that next week against Saints.
No, you absolutely
can't do that
not.
Next week against
No,
Saints.
You can't carry passages against St. Helens because they'll rip you apart. No. It's a good point because, like I say, we've both mentioned the toughness as it was for Hull to get upfield, and Satire was the only prop who made inroads there and who busted tackles and made ground. And, you know, Jack Brown gave it a go. He came on. And there's a player there. Absolutely, there's a player there. Brad Fashion ain't got a problem with either. But when you're carrying those three, it's not like the 6'2" and 18 stone, is it? They're all like 5'9", 5'10". And when you don't use one, and like I say, then you're pushing to get extra minutes out of your lanes, your Sevelios, your... Even your satires and yourselves and your fascists, it becomes tough.
Undue pressure on them. Yeah.
It does, yeah. That is a really good point, that. We've got to start using the full complement at the 17, and you're right in saying it's not the first time. I think it's actually happened about 5 or 6 times now, to be honest. And I think it's not the first time it's happened to Aidan Burrell either. It happened at Huddersfield away last year after the game after the ragtag win when he got 90 seconds of action. So I don't know, is it a little bit frustrating for him thinking, I've been in the match day squad 3-4 times now and I've had, you know, under 2 minutes of action, 2 minutes of playing minutes. I understand you don't want a young kid to get eaten alive, but at the same time, we want to be a club that champions our youth and brings them through. And
at what point do you throw him into the mix though? You can't just.
He was there 5 minutes yesterday at least. You know the way Hull were defending. I don't think he would have let us down. He was worth a stint. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to rip it up Chris Sattar style, but he would have done a job on it, and he can guarantee that his effort level mixed with those around him, Danny Houghton's, your Liggy Sows, those defending in the middle, Joe Lover, Joe John Johnston, he would have held his own alongside them. And as I say, it was worth 5 minutes. We can't afford to do that next week.
And all he's doing is getting in his head. He's getting in his head now.
Yeah.
Or if it isn't, he's a better bloke than me, because I'd be getting in my head.
Yeah, it would wind me up as well, yeah, if I was playing. But yeah, it's a small nitpicking point, but I think it's a valid one, because, with all due respect, Wakefield are a top side. They are what they are. They're going to be bottom four this year, I've no doubt in saying that. And you could argue, would it have come back to bite us perhaps against the side in that situation who were a bit more, blessed with quality, if that happens against a Leeds or any of the Lancashire clubs, Greater Manchester /Merseyside/Cheshire clubs, or whatever they are now, it probably would have ended up in defeat, wouldn't it? And then, it's a really good point to make, and we've got to get that right as the season goes on. A bit craftier interchange management and trust in every aspect of the squad, because you've got to look to the future as well. And you blood these kids, you give them minutes when it matters, you give them that experience, it serves them in good stead for the long term. And with Hull FC, we know it's not about the right here, right now, because we know that we're not going to be making, such inroads in the competition. We know we're not going to be looking at winning it or even top four or anything like that. So we've got to think, right, what can we get out of this year? Like, what we can get out of this year is blooding youngsters. And so let's give Burrell minutes. Let's say we've done that with Connor Wynn. We've done that with Cam Scott. I want Connor Wynn to still be at Hull in 10 years' time as a mainstay player of this team, because I think he is good enough to do that. And to achieve that, you give him a start. You don't worry. You don't even hesitate about it. You think, all right, we've just lost Josh Griffin. Now we'll just put Connor Wynn there. Same on the other flank. We've lost Carlos Tuomo-Vaivy. We'll put Cam Scott there. I like that mentality. So we've done it there. I know we're talking about players that have played 30, 40 games rather than someone who's played 2 minutes of Super League action, but you still got to trust them. You've got to start somewhere, haven't you? And
yeah, but the problem is, mate, is that Aidan Burrell shouldn't have played 2 minutes. He should have played at least 160 minutes, because he's been on the bench 3 bloody times. He hasn't gone on twice.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Hopefully that's something we can look at in the coming games. I think we've used every member of the 17-man squad adequately, and we've got the best out of them. And yeah, it's definitely something to look at as we approach the rest of the Super League season. So elsewhere then, in round one, I think we've touched on pretty much everything there. A really good weekend of action. I mean, I've seen 5 of the 6 games, which is pretty incredible when you think it, really. I mean, 4 on TV, 1 live. The only one we didn't get to see was Caston Salford. So, I've seen pretty much all the action, and yeah, some really good stuff. St Helens, stuffing Catalans. I mean, I was really disappointed in Catalans. They came to disrupt, they came to rattle, and St Helens just scolded them, laughed at them, and ran around them, thinking, oh, cheers, boys. I mean, and that worries me a little bit ahead for next week as well. We can't play like that. We can't think, oh, we're going to rattle St Helens, because you don't. We've got to think, right, what we're going to do, is we're going to try play like you. We're going to try and be intense. We're going to try get in your face, but we're going to try play some rugby, and we'll try go around you, because we have got the speed to do that. But as I said, let's read out the results. St Helens 28, Catalans 8, Rovers 10, Wigan 24, LOL. Cash 16, Salford 26, Leeds 20, Warrington 22, Toulouse 14, Huddersfield 42, and obviously Wakefield 12, Hull 16. So
yeah, saw a couple of cast fans having a bit of a meltdown about their lack of flair. You've been known as classy cast for quite a while. Well, I'm not sure whether that's going to carry on now you've got Lee in charge. But that's interesting, actually, that they've turned already after one game. But interesting, very interesting.
See, Freemo got sin bin, didn't he, in that game?
Doesn't he always? He's got that in him, hasn't he?
He has, unfortunately.
Sent off a couple of times for us.
Yeah, he was, yeah. The Featherstone one. You couldn't even argue with that, could you? Thinking, that's a Stonewall red. He's got that in him. We'll see, Fanua also made his debut for Castleford. He did put a try on for, I think it was Daryl Alfords, but when I look at what happened with all those outside backs this week, and I'm thinking, God, we have made the right decisions there. We really have, because speed. Yep. There is no substitute for speed, and I will bore every listener to death about speed this year because I absolutely love it and long may it continue. But yeah, I don't think there was too many shocks across the card there really. I tell you what, the game between Leeds and Warrington was an absolute belter. I mean, Channel 4, the coverage, it was fresh, it was gripping, it engaged you. Obviously, that helps when you've got a game which is an absolute belter.
Did they choose the right game?
Eh? Oh, absolutely.
Did they what?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The figures are absolutely class. I mean, 531,000 average and a 735,000 peak. So, yeah, you know, starters you mean to go on and all that. That's an hell of a start, but I know, on the contrary, you've got something to air about that, haven't you? Something that's gone on in Australia about it.
Well, yeah. Channel 4 hasn't... either Channel 4 hasn't sold the rights to Fox Sports, or Fox Sports have been lacking in actually putting their hand up and saying we want to buy the rights. So Fox aren't showing it. So that's 10 games a year that I'm not going to see. Simple as. So... kind of an acquaintance of mine, I won't call him a friend because he's a Rover supporter, but an acquaintance of mine over here, Len, who's an Aussie guy, but he was looking for an English team to support, and God knows why, but he chose Rovers. And he's quite friendly with a bloke who works at Fox Sports, who's actually the head of acquisitions. So both me and Len have been on this guy all week saying, what's going on? What's going on? What's going on? And he's actually said, I may have no idea. I'll find out. And when he's made the inquiry, they're like, oh, really? All right. Okay. Well, we've got no plans. We've got no plans at all to buy that. So we're like, right, well, did you even know it existed? You know, what's going on? So the guy's actually said, look, it's not dead in the water just yet, but currently the official line is there are no plans to buy the feed off Channel 4 to show the games. There was no secondary broadcast rights negotiated with Channel 4 for their coverage, I don't think, other than, you know, with Super League saying that we can use your stuff on our online, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's a bit, it's a bit up in the air at the moment. There's going to be 10 games a year that I don't see, including the first one, which is Hull and Saints. There is no way for me to watch it. All four and channel4.com have got a geolocation thing on, so unless I get myself a really dodgy VPN, I'm not going to be able to watch the game next week, which I'm gutted about.
Yeah, as I am for you, but, you know, from a rugby league, you're looking at that as a rugby league fan, you're thinking, that's a bit backwards, isn't it? Shouldn't we be trying to broadcast as many games as possible? Shouldn't we be trying to say, yeah, you can, we'll sell you the rights, yes, you can show this on your platform, but just make a big song and dance about it being us that's actually broadcasting it? I just don't understand that, actually. I really don't. It's something we touched on with Sky last week when we saw a couple of screenshots from people's TV planners blocking the ability to put a recording series link. They've rectified that now because we've already put ours on for Owen Saints, not to rub it in, next week. But I just think it's backwards. I mean, we want what's best for the game. We want as many people watching the game as possible. That's what was so good about the Channel 4 stuff. I mean, near enough 750,000 people watching rugby league. How good is that? That's fantastic. That's what we want, and that's what this is all about, getting it on a bigger platform on terrestrial TV and boxes.
And just perfect, you know, really, from what I can understand, you know, a really good game, really well presented, really good commentary, and, you know, a game that went right down to the wire and was a fantastic advert for our game, you know, and people all over the UK watching it, you know, it's great. I mean, you can't put a price on that. That's just brilliant.
Absolutely, and it really was an outstanding game of rugby league. I mean, I was captivated from minute one to minute 80. It was brilliant, and, you know, fair play to Mark Wilson as well, who's, you know, he's supported Up the Cream in the past, actually. He's mentioned us back in his days on Radio Yorkshire. Obviously, he's big time now, I don't know whether he'll do it anymore. But, you know, he's a good bloke.
Too good for the likes of us now.
Yeah, too professional for us. Well, he's a sound bloke, and he's a passionate sports fan. And, you know, he cares about rugby league. And I just thought the way it was presented, right from Adam Hills, Leon Price, Sam Tompkins, Danica, it was great. It was really good. I say that's what we want for the game. Brilliant start, and let's hope that continues. The only thing I will quarrel on is wish they had more than 10 games. wish it was one every round. I mean, again, you're going to hate me, but, you know, if we had 27 games, one a week, Oh, Saturday at 12 o'clock, right. I don't know anything about rugby league up until last weekend, but yeah, I live in Bristol, I'll give it a go, then I'll tell all my mates about it and I'll get them to watch it. So that's what you do, innit? You've got to create a supply and a demand, and hopefully that's what Channel 4 will do. But yeah, really good start.
You're dead right. And the pulling power of someone like Adam Hills, who, you know, will be on Mock the Week, or then he'll be on Last Leg, and then he'll be on Have I Got News for You, or he'll be on whatever else, as a comedian and as a host and as a professional celebrity, then being the face of our sport, that's got some cachet. Because, you know, other than that, people in the South would go, oh, rugby league, oh, Johnny Vegas, it's not for me. Mm. I barely understand him. Do you know? And, you know, people in the South looking at the Skies thing would go, what the hell is JJB saying?
Yeah.
You know? Sounds like he's drunk with a mouthful of marbles. Yeah. And, you know, that's unfortunate, because he's a fairly bright bloke who suffers with a lack of being able to be understood because of the way he talks, you know? And that's not great for our sport when we're trying to appeal to a mass audience who don't particularly connect with something that they've always thought was a northern sport. Someone like Adam Hills can go a long way towards mitigating that thought. And, you know, their push for it, you know, the pre-game sting, you know, when he's talking about first black coach and Clive Sullivan being the first Great Britain, the first captain of a Great Britain sport, any sport, being black, and, you know, and just, yeah, it looked really professional and really good. And, you know, I love rugby league, me, should be the catch cry for every single supporter.
Yeah, absolutely. That promo really video, should. It really should, you're right. And that promo
the
video.
Promo was amazing.
It was class, wasn't it? Yeah, I was like, thinking, this is rugby league. I love this spot, mate. That's incredible. I want to be here. I want to watch that. Yeah.
As someone who works in the industry, without me, you know, trying to blow my own trumpet here, someone who works in the industry, that was gold standard. That really was very, very good.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Showed Sky up a little bit, haven't they, really?
Totally.
Let's see how they go on as the year progresses. This is one weekend. You know, we want this throughout the year, and obviously all the broadcasts that they get this year. But yeah, that was a really, really, really good start.
Good start, yeah.
Absolutely. Some really, 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 well, inspirational news this weekend was the fact that former Hullback rower Jansen Terjic made a rugby league return playing for local amateur club West Hull. A try-scoring return as well, and just to see the support and reaction. I mean, that blew up on social media on Saturday night, and, you know, I'm actually buzzing for him because, you know, mental health, we all know the stigmas with it, and especially with the bloke, you know, it's supposed to be tough to just suck it in and get on with it, but nah, we're moving on now, it's 2022, and I'm just glad he's been able to come out and be vocal about what happened to him and where he was and now how he's in a good place now, and it is an inspirational story, and to see him come back and do what he loves best is, well, to be honest, it was nothing short of incredible. It was, yeah, really emotional, and I think just to see the support, I just thought it was really touching, to be honest. It was, you know, it just shows the best of all that. You know, that's what Hull is all about. It will support you when we've got a fanatical rugby league fan base in a vibrant rugby league community, a rugby league hub, if you like. That's what Hull is, and yeah, just really good feel-good story, that.
Yeah, agreed. And the thing that made it even better for me was the fact that one of the first people to actually say well done and you know, I'm really proud of you, was Frank Pritchard. And that was the first thing that Frank Pritchard's posted since he came out of hospital. Literally the first post that he's made, because I checked.
That's brilliant.
He hasn't sent any other Twitter post at all. But that was the first one. And that speaks wonders to me. You know, that's about, you know, that's what people ex-players have said to me, you know, it's not a club, it's family.
Yeah.
You know, we might have got away from that over the years, but it's still family. And you know, for someone like Jansen, who's, you know, who was on the outer at Hull, and you know, we let him go, and you know, for him to have those appalling things happen to him, and you know, like you say, mental health is an awful thing to have to deal with, poor mental health. And to see the way that people have kind of rallied around and been proud of him, and for him to come back after some horrendous injuries to actually have to play at any standard of rugby league is nothing short of incredible, and he needs to be, you know, standing ovation. That's amazing.
Absolutely, and National Conference is a good standard of rugby league as well. We've just seen Hunslet Park side, you know, beat a League One side this weekend, and not just beat them, they stuffed them, London Scholars. So, yeah, there's some talent in that league, and it's I say it's a good standard. So yeah, fair play to the lad, and let's hope he can kick on and keep going. Lee Middleton, who is a regular listener of our podcast, or Up the Cream podcast, he runs the Mighty Black and White's Facebook page.
Yeah.
Just asked me to share this, and it's something he's doing in partnership with Lammy Sports, in loving memory of Hull's B lady, Jean Bishop, who passed away last year. And they've put a tribute video on their Facebook page, as I say, the Mighty Black and Whites. It's available for all to see. And we are proud to announce that Lammy Sports will be releasing a new charity shirt on Friday, May the 13th, which would have been Jean's 100th birthday. And all money from each sale will go direct to the charity that Jean loved and supported. That's Age UK Hull. So, you know, that's outstanding. Fair play to Lee. Fair play to Lammy Sports. I'm hoping that'll be well supported. They're going to do their absolute best in Jean's memory and do her proud and as raise as much money as possible.
That's lovely. That's really, really heartwarming. That's a really nice thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well done, Lee. And obviously well done to everyone involved in that. Looking ahead to Hull's game then, St Helens on Saturday afternoon, we've sort of touched on what we want to see, and we understand it's going to be really tough because these are the three-peat Super League champions and they are absolutely outstanding. They are the benchmark by a long, long, long way. And I know that intensifies salt levels in Wigan these days, but it's a fact. They are incredible. They are such a good organisation. You look at St Helens and they're everything I want to see about. Oh, they're quick, they're dynamic, they're expansive, they're skillful, they're speedy. But off the field, they've got everything right. They bring through players into their system. They trust them. They back them. And then when it comes to recruitment, like, oh, yeah, we'll go get Will Hopperati. We'll go get Curtis Sirenan. Oh, we'll go fill out. We'll go get Conrad Hurrell and turn him into what Leeds hoped he would be. And everything about them just stinks of class. And it winds me up a little bit as well because I'm jealous. I'm envious. I really am. And to be honest, Hull fans have got a good rapport with St Helens, actually. I think we get on. Ever since the 2005 semi-final, when we obviously stuffed them at Huddersfield and they took it on the chin. They were absolutely full of class. You know, they were stood outside clapping us as we made our way back to the coaches and, you know, wishing all the best for the final and everything else. And they are a very, very likeable club. I say there's nothing to dislike about St Helens. It's going to be a hell of a tough game.
Mate, gold standard. We've said it before, but absolute gold standard that team. In everything. You know, the owner, their stadium, their the way that they go about business, their playing group, the way they win, the way they play. They don't just win ugly. They've got a standard of play that we should aspire to, that every team should aspire to. You know, when a player leaves them, he doesn't seem to go on to great success. But when a player gets there, he seems to raise his game to be part of that. You know, I mean, Conrad Hurrell being the absolute case in point at the moment. You know, he's you know, what would you say about Conrad Hurrell's last 2 years at Leeds? Well, you'd say, well, yeah, you know, never looked happy, never looked right, never, you know, made the dream team, but could have been a lot better. And I think, you know, most opposition fans looked at him and thought, there's an opportunity for us to attack. I don't think they looked at him and thought, oh, we should be frightened of him. But then he's gone to Saints. And that game he played, you know, they're just incredible, you know, offloads. And just looking like a completely different player, looking like the player that he was when he burst through over here, really.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, which is unbelievable that playing for a team, playing for his second team in England, can seem to bring that back.
Yeah.
Just amazing.
It is, yeah. It's just testament to them as an organisation, isn't it, as a club. And we all know how it's going to be on Saturday, and you've got to stop them as much as possible, but we've also got to match them if... Yeah, we've got to stop them getting a roll on as much as we can. And then likewise, we've got to get a roll on ourselves. And I think the ruck's going to be absolutely crucial, the speed of the ruck in particular. Because if you let Roby play, you're going to get stuffed. And so I sort of look, how can we counterbalance that? Well, we've got to get Lovajua some minutes. Okay. We've got to spell him with Houghton. I don't like Super League stats. And to be honest, I don't know how accurate they actually are. But on the Super League website, they're all there already. And... apparently, Danny Houghton ran once. Same with Josh Reynolds. That's bollocks. They ran more than that. But if Houghton's spelled, we will get more jumping out that ruck. Because he has got it in his game. That's the most frustrating thing. But he has to channel his energy. And then he gets lambasted as his player that makes 60, 65 tackles and not much else. because basically he's run himself into the ground. It's been that way for so long, and it's frustrating, and it's why we all want a change in direction in the hooking position, and obviously we've got that now. And if we have got the middles that come into the side to push Lovejua back to hooker, whether it's a start or whether it's off the bench, fantastic, because that's what we all want to see.
Yeah, I mean, you look at that same side, mate, as well. You know, there are very few weak links there. Very few. I mean, you look across the pitch there and you think, bloody hell, where would you attack them? You know, they've got, you know, Hopewhite's not the fastest winger, but he's bloody safe. Mackinson's rapid. Hurrell and Percival were brilliant. Wellsby looks really, really accomplished at fullback. You know, Dodd, Lomax, you know, Roby as a spine, bloody hell, you know. Really tough props, good second rowers and a really strong bench. Bloody, what do you do? You know, where do you attack them? What do you do to mitigate that? It's going to be a hard ask. It's a big assignment this weekend, it really is.
It is, yeah, it is. Again, what I'm so envious of is the fact that they can throw Lewis Dodd in there and he looks the absolute part. You're a teenager, for God's sake. It's ridiculous. Yeah, it's a tall order at St. Helens, you know, three-peat Super League champions. But no one's going to go in there expecting Hull to win and then kick off if we don't win. But what we will do is we'll kick off if we get beat by 40-50. That's what we want to avoid, because this year, when we do get beat, because no one's ever going to go a full unbeaten season, all 27 games, unless you're Arthur Bunting in 1978-79. But it's the manner of defeat. That's what matters this year. It's the manner of defeat and how we get beat and how we go down fighting and how we keep going and show that effort and never throw the towel in and just keep playing and see what happens. Because at the end of the day, you never know. I mean, a game's not won on paper, is it? You've got to go in and you've got to fight and you've got to play some rugby. And if we stick to what we want to see this year, you know, we've got Luke Gale out there, we've got Josh Reynolds out there, still going to have some big players. I mean, dare I say, will we have Jake Connor? We'll soon find out. I mean, ironically, usually we finish recording this and then on the night the disciplinary news comes out. So to say anything like this will be out of date in a few hours' time. But again, you just wait and see if he's in, great. If he's not, then just got to suck it up, haven't we? But yeah, I just want to see Hull.
I'm worried about that.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. But yeah, I just want to see Hull give a good account of themselves at home. Home form again is crucial, and all I've done the members offer, you know, two extra tickets for every member for a tenner, which is, you know, brilliant. That should fill the place up a little bit, hopefully get a, you know, a good crowd there. And you know, they don't want to go home on the back of a stuffing. And yeah, it's finishing this off a bit negatively now, aren't we? But that's the reality of it, because we have succumbed to some massive defeats in recent years, and they need to be a thing of the past now. If we are to go down, and I'm not just saying this is a 4-1 conclusion, because if we're having that attitude, then we might as well not bother turning up. Might as well just forfeit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, might as well just give them the 48-0 win now. But yeah, let's go at them and see what happens. And you know, if we do get beat, then so be it. But go down fighting.
Yeah, and look to say that they turned over a very good Catalan side, who I've got to say looked fairly rudderless. You know, Mitch Pearce will take a while to get his feet back, but they didn't look great. And yeah, you know, Napa being a dickhead, but they were very, very good, and they didn't look to me like they were in anywhere near top gear either. Sense
it's worrying, so, isn't it?
Yeah, it is worrying. You know, maybe this is the best time of the year to play them. Cold, possibly wet. You know, during the day, not at night. I'd suggest they play most of their games at night, since, because they're generally on Sky.
Yeah.
You know, during the day, away from home, against a team that are unconventional and unfancied like Hull. You know, it's a possibility. It's a real possibility.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, there's nothing like being the underdog, being unfancied, rather than being caught in your own hype. So yeah, I quite like it, to be honest. Let's see what happens, and let's just hope that Hull can give a good account of themselves, you know, with some positives and something to go on.
Yeah, 100%.
All right, then, we'll leave that there for another edition of the podcast. Thanks for your time, Rich, and as always, come on, you all.
No worries, mate. Thank you.